Log Talk Radio.
Baruch Hashem, this is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you on this 25th day of January 2019. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We are broadcasting today on Facebook, and hopefully I'll be able to put this onto YouTube later. Facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can find us there live streaming. Also, we can also do our YouTube.com/user/ God is my compass. So you can also comment, which is why I paused there for a minute. Commenting, I can read comments on the Facebook live stream, and I will try to watch those as they come in. If there's any relevant questions to what we're talking about today, I'll try to answer those. I am going to try to get through Chapter 10 today. I do have to pick up my daughter in an hour and a half, so we'll see how far we get into this Chapter 10. And then if it only takes 45 minutes to get through Chapter 10 and I don't have any questions, then we will end the program at that point. Once again, the guest call-in number is 917-889-8827, and I do have the studio up and running for anybody who does want to call in after the reading. Keep in mind, I don't know much about the day-night, and so I don't know if I'll be able to answer many questions concerning this particular chapter, but I can answer questions, other questions as well. So we'll just get right into the reading, and this is Chapter 10, The Day-Night of Blood Atonement by Ogden Kraut, page 142. You can read this for free online at ogdenkraut.com/ Why do I always say that? I don't know what the forward slash is. Just click on Read Ogden's Books. It'll bring you to a new page. It's the second book down, that book, Blood Atonement. Click on that, and it'll bring you to the page. And then do a Control F for 100 and put 142. That's Find In Page, and you'll be able to read along. Also, I do post these at Zion's Redemption Bookstore, which is a page on Facebook. I post all of the text to whatever it is that we get through each day on that page. So, all right, so let's get into this. Day-night meeting today. A great ingathering of the brethren. After considerable preaching, as usual, and a vast expenditure of breathe-in expounding to the dupes, the high priesthood up in the middle of the 11 men, and with their hands uplifted, administered the oath and initiated them into the band of warriors and sons of thunder. The whole band of warriors was organized into companies of 10, 20s, 50s, 100s, etc. The whole were placed under the command of the brigadier general with his under officers, colonels, majors, etc., accompanied with a band of music, end quote, William Schwartzel, Mormonism Exposed, 25 and 26. By 1838, Missouri became a hotbed of persecution for the Mormons. They were being burned, beaten, and buried, and their troubles were only increasing. They sought for help from local residents, from county and state officials, but with little success. From out of this chaos and calamity came the Day-Nights. The exact date of the organization of the Day-Night Band is not known, probably because it was just a gradual and mutual effort of the Mormons to protect themselves from the mobbers and outlaws. It was in existence by the summer of 1838, when so many depredations against the Mormons were occurring. Mutual efforts, page 143, for defense and cooperative projects for protection had existed from the early the early plundering by mobs. However, there is nothing illegal or immoral in individuals or citizens forming a means of self-defense against any destructive force when natural, whether natural or human. Probably the most complete report we have of the Danite organization came from Sidney Rigdon, who claimed that he was not a member of that organization, and he probably wasn't, but evidence indicates that he was aware of it and probably sanctioned its activities. Rigdon wrote, quote, "At this time, things began to assume an alarming aspect both to the citizens of Davies and Caldwell counties. Mobs were forming all around the country, declaring that they would drive the people out of the state. This made our appeals to the authorities more deeply solicitous as the danger increased, and very soon after this, the mobs commenced their depredations, which was a general system of plunder, tearing down fences, exposing all within the field of destruction, and driving off every animal they could find. Sometime previous to this, in consequence of threatenings which were made by mobs or those who were being formed into mobs, and the abuses committed by them, person and property of the citizens, an association was formed called the Danite Band." Stupid flies. Anyway, all right, let's see here. "This, as far as I was acquainted with it, not being myself one of the number, neither was Joseph Smith, was for mutual protection against the bands that were forming and threatened to be formed for the professed object of committing violence on the property and persons of the citizens of Davies and Caldwell counties. They had certain signs and words by which they could know one another, either by day or night. They were bound to keep these signs and words secret so that no other person or persons than themselves could know them. When any of these persons were assailed by any lawless band, he would make it known to others who would flee to his relief at the risk of life." I guess I'm popular with the flies. They want to be part of the program today. I don't know. He keeps on landing right here and walking around. I guess he needs a friend. Anyway, in this way, they sought to defend each other's lives and property, but they were strictly enjoined not to touch any person. Only those who were engaged in acts of violence against the persons or property of one of their own number or one of those whose life and property they had bound themselves to defend. Page 144. This organization was in existence when the mobs commenced their most violent attempt upon the citizens of the before mentioned counties, and from this association aroused all the horror afterwards expressed by the mob at some secret clan known as the Danites. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, pages 453 and 454. See also The Times and Seasons, Volume 4, page 271. The first attempt to organize this protective and defensive clan occurred in June of 1838 at Far West, Missouri. That effort was soon abandoned, but the second attempt was more successful a month later at Adamanundayaman. The term Danites indicates that an actual organization existed. It was soon revealed that it not only had a purpose and mission, but was a structure with leaders and officials, or I'm sorry, and officers. Some called it the Brother of Gideon, or the Big Fan. Others knew it as the Daughters of Zion. Jared Carter was originally its commander and had a brother of the name of Gideon, which may have accounted for the first name. John Corll wrote of it as the Big Fan, which had its connotation from the scriptures that wheat must go through the fan to drive out the chaff. Samson Evard, the founder of the society, usually called it by the name of the Daughters of Zion, which also was derived from the scriptures, which read, quote, "And thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion. The kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail. For now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt go even to Babylon. There shalt thou be delivered. There the Lord shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thine horn iron." That's a symbol of authority. "And I will make thy hooves brass, and thou shalt beat in pieces many people, and I will consecrate their gain unto the Lord, and their substance unto the Lord of the whole earth." Micah chapter 4, verses 8, 10, and 13. The term Danites is the name by which it became best known, and it too was taken from the Bible. The Danites, page 145, the Danites were the children of the sons of Jacob, or of the tribe of Dan. In those days, the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in, and a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. These were the children of Dan, who were 600 men appointed with their weapons of war, who established a city and named it Dan. See Judges chapter 17 and 18. With the reorganization that occurred, probably from the times that it had to be reactivated or new members recruited, the name probably changed with each stage of development. The principal object of this organization was one of protection or defense, and if necessary, to capture, overthrow, and destroy the arms, plans, or movements of any forces that threatened the Mormon people. This was all to be done according to the justification by the law of the land, upon directives from the head of the church, from the heads of the church. Although it was a physical force, a marshaling of arms, and was a military in form, it was not an outlaw terror force, as many had painted it out to be. When Evard and Corel apostatized, they said they were of the opinion and I think the organization was to drive dissenters out of the county. Evard's testimony in court clearly established that the major purpose of the Danite organization was to defend ourselves against mobs. Such marshaling of arms and men was not uncommon in the history of Mormonism, as demonstrated by 210 armed men who went to Clay County to aid their brethren against attacking mobs, or the 500 men who went from Kirtland to Missouri, not to mention the Nauvoo Legion or the Mormon Battalion. General Alexander Doniphan told Joseph Smith to organize the Latter-day Saints in an effort to hold off the lawlessness of the Missouri mobocrats. They were to represent the militia of Caldwell County under the direction of Lieutenant Colonel George M. Hinkle. Joseph understood the careful employment of such an action, and therefore was very careful in all their movements to act in strict accordance with the constitutional laws of the land. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 162. Soon there were 100 men gathered in the public square or far west, ready to march to Adamanon Diamond for the purpose of repelling the attacks of the mobs. This sort of civilian militia and home guard was already organized in Daviess County, and by the way, is protected by the Constitution. Anyway, let's see. Lyman White described this order, page 146 of Blood Atonement. The county having been settled, the governor issued an order for the organization of the of the county and of a regiment of militia, and an election being called for a colonel of said regiment, I was erected unanimously, receiving 236 votes in August of 1837. We then organized with subaltern officers according to the statutes of the states and received legal and lawful commissions from Governor Boggs for the same. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 440. White and Hinkle were officers of this militia, and each man held an official commission as colonel from Governor Lilburn W. Boggs, commander of all the state's troops. These groups were soon called the armies of Israel by many of those who belonged to them. They were subdivided by smaller units of tens and fifties. Samson of Ard got up some men to also form a militia with the same purpose as the armies of Israel. There was nothing wrong with this home defense group, and it was the express wish of the governor of Missouri that they have this kind of force on the western frontier. Neither was there any objection from the presidency of the church. Avard was accomplishing much towards these objectives in gaining many members in this mutual protection society. There were other objectives besides just fending off mobs. They helped to rebuild homes, plant gardens, fight fires, ward off Indians, etc. The readiness and the preparedness of each Danite was explained by Swartzel, who said, quote, "Every Danite must hold himself in readiness at a moment's warning, by day or by night. Each of you must be equipped with a gun or a cowskin or a pistol, etc. According to your different stations, each one of you is to have on hand the pound of powder and 100 bullets." Mormonism Exposed, page 23. Edvard's purpose in organization the Danites were honorable in defending the saints and protecting their rights as citizens under the Constitution of the United States. However, as conditions became worse for the Mormons, the Danites grew in numbers and power. Then Edvard saw a chance for personal aggrandizement by unscrupulous ends. On page 147 of Blood Atonement, which you can read for free along with me online at ogdenkraut.com, click on Read Ogden's Books and then click on Blood Atonement, and we're on page 147. Avard began to encounter some difficulty explaining why members of the First Presidency of the Church had not made appearances at his meetings. When they did come by, Peck said that Avard did not explain to the presidency what his teachings had been in that society. He does mention that they had been Avard. Anyway, what they had done, organizing and protecting the saints, had been approved. It was his teachings and objectives that had turned his whole effort into chaos and disrepute. The prophet explained that the purpose of the society and its name were originally for protection. The Danite system never had any official existence. It was a term made use of by some of the brethren in Far West and grew out of an expression I made use of when the brethren were preparing to defend themselves from the Missouri mob in reference to the stealing of Micah's image in Judges chapter 18. If the enemy comes, the Danites will be after them, meaning the brethren in self-defense. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 6, page 165. Avard probably saw an advantage or opportunity to use the name and the object of defense to establish such a clan, even though Joseph Smith did not know of it until much later. The Danite band was supposed to have a constitution which was also secret and supposedly read in the home of Sidney Rigdon and approved by all who were to participate in that organization. Avard first explained it and then read the articles, whereas in all bodies of law, or in all bodies, law are necessary for the permanency, safety, and well-being of the society. We, the members of the Society of the Daughters of Zion, do agree to regulate ourselves under such laws as, in righteousness, shall be deemed necessary for the preservation of our holy religion and of our most sacred rights and the rights of our wives and children. But to be explicit on the subject, it is especially our object to support and defend the rights conferred on us by our venerable sires who purchased them with the pledge of their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors. And now to prove ourselves worthy of the liberty conferred on us by them in the providence of God, we do agree to be governed by such laws as shall perpetuate these high privileges of which we know ourselves to be the rightful possessors, and of which privileges wicked and designing men have tried to deprive us by all manner of evil, and that purely in consequence of the tenacity we have manifested in the discharge of our duty towards our God, who has given us those rights and privileges, and a right in common with others to dwell on this land. But we, not having the privilege of others allowing unto us, have determined, like our fathers, to resist tyranny, whether it be in kings or in the people. It is all alike unto us. Our rights we must have, and our rights we shall have in the name of Israel's God. Article 1st. All power belongs originally and legitimately to the people, and they have a right to dispose of it as they shall deem fit. But inconvenient and impossible to convene the people in all cases, the legislative powers have been given by them from time to time into the hands of the representation composed of delegates from the peoples themselves. This is and has been the law, both in civil and religious bodies, and is the true principle. Article 2. The executive power shall be vested in the president of the whole church and his counselors. Article 3. The legislative power shall reside in the president and his counselors together with the generals and colonels of the society. By them all laws shall be made regulating the society. Article 4. All offices shall be during life and good behavior, or to be regulated by the law of God. Article 5. The society reserves the power of electing all its officers, with the exception of the aides and clerks, which the offers may need in their various stations. The nominations to go from the presidency to his second, and from the second to the third in rank, and so down through all the various grades. Each branch or department retains the power of electing its own particular officers. Article 6. Punishment shall be administered to the guilty in accordance to the offense, and no member shall be punished without law or by any other than those appointed by law for that purpose. The legislature shall have powers to make laws regulating punishments as in their judgments shall be wisdom and righteousness. Article 7. There shall be a secretary whose business it shall be to keep all the legislative records of the society, and also to keep a register of the names of every member of the society, also the rank of the officers. He shall also communicate the laws to the generals as directed by laws made for the regulation of such business by the legislature, on page 149 of Blood Atonement. Article 8. All officers shall be subject to the commands of the Captain General given through the Secretary of War, and so all officers shall be subject to their superiors in rank according to laws made for that purpose. Senate Document 189, or Volume 189, pages 5 and 6. In his pamphlet, Mormonism Exposed, William Swartzel gave an account of the day-night meeting, quote, "Some talk of a meeting, for what purpose I do not know. It is called a day-night meeting. It was held in a grove in the woods adjoining Brother White's house, where a number of benches were made out of tree splits in two, or out of trees split in two. Sentinels armed with pistols, swords, and guns were posted on the outskirts of the grove, while the day nights, as they were called, occupied the center. Just as these things were going on, Brother Higby asked me if I could eat strong meat. I answered him that I could if the meat had a good sense," talking about meat of the gospel. The answer deprived me of being then let into the secret or being admitted to the meeting. Mormonism Exposed, page 17. The oath and covenant of this Dana order, according to Avard, was as follows. "In the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, I do solemnly obligate myself ever to conceal and never to reveal the secrets of this society called the Daughters of Zion. Should I ever do the same, I hold my life as forfeiture." End quote. Senate Document, page 1, or Volume 189, page 2. Swartzel said it was like this, quote, "Now I do solemnly swear by the eternal Jehovah, that I will decree to bear and conceal and never reveal this secret at the peril of committing perjury or enduring the pains of death, and my body shall be shot and laid in the dust. Amen." End quote. Mormonism Exposed, page 200. Anyway. Another part of their oath was certain signs and tokens that were made for mutual protection by which a fellow Danite might call for help without using his voice. According to John D. Lee, it was after this manner, quote, "When the sign was given, it must be responded to and obeyed, even at the risk of certain death. That Danite that would refuse to respect the token and did not comply with its regulation was stamped with dishonor, infamy, and shame and disgrace, and his fate for cowardice was death." We're on page 150 of Blood Atonement. "The sign or token of distress is made by placing the right hand on the right side of the face with the points of the finger upward, shoving the hand upward until the ear is snug up between the thumb and the forefinger. Confessions of John D. Lee, page 57. "But as in every organization, there are a few who bring discredit upon all. Such was the ultimate end of Dr. Samson Avard. Through his actions, the church experienced another disastrous misfortune. Avard began to seize on the opportunity of stealing from the Gentiles for his own personal advantage. He even attempted to use the Danite organization for his force. Said Avard to his company, quote, 'Know ye not, brethren, that it soon shall be your privilege to take your respective companies and go out on a scout on the borders of the settlements and take for to yourself spoils of the goods of the ungodly Gentile? For it is written, the riches of the Gentiles shall be consecrated to my people, the house of Israel, and thus you will waste away the Gentiles by robbing and plundering them of their property And in this way, we will build up the kingdom of God and roll forth the little stone that Daniel saw cut out of the mountain without hands. We'll roll forth until it fills the whole earth. For this is the very way that God destines to build up his kingdom in the last days. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 180. Avard's Spoils of War speech gained little or no enthusiasm, and it began to forge a new division and dissension among the Mormon people. Prior to this, the Mormon concept had always been to capture the mind and heart of men by the principles of religion. But now Avard wanted their wealth and possessions by dishonesty and plunder. The prophet said that Avard was smooth, flattering, and winning, which gave him the influence that he gained among the Mormon people. Also by his smiles and flattery, persuaded them to believe it and proceed to administer to the few under his control an oath binding them to everlasting secrecy to everything. End quote. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 179. Or on page 151 of Blood Atonement, chapter 10, the Danites. Finally, the power he was generating became a toxic stimulus for his ego, and Avard said, quote, "If our enemies swear against us, we can swear also. Why do you startle at this, brethren? As the Lord liveth, I would swear to a lie to clear any of you." And if this would not do, I would put them, the enemy, under the sands of Moses, under the sand as Moses did the Egyptians. And in this way we will consecrate much unto the Lord and build up his kingdom. And who can stand against us? And if any one of this Danite society reveals any of these things, I will put him where the dogs cannot bite him. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 180. Whether anyone was to consider the militia of the Mormons as Danites or by any other name, its organization was legal and, as the prophet said, was for good and righteous purposes. What Avard did was wrong and was denounced by the prophet. Therefore, that ban was short-lived. The organizational militia that Joseph sustained had an honorable objective and mission and was legal and law-abiding according to the Constitution. Avard had a secret, well-guarded band that was just the opposite. While the evil spirits were raging up and down in the state to raise mobs against the Mormons, Satan himself was no less busy in striving to stir up mischief in the camp of the saints. And among the most conspicuous of his willing devotees was one doctor, Samson Avard, who had been in the church but a short time, and so although he had generally behaved with a tolerable degree of external decorum, was secretly aspiring to be the leader of the people. This was his pride and his folly, and to form a secret combination by which he might rise a mighty conqueror at the expense and overthrow of the church. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 179. Put this little clock here. We have less than an hour before I have to go pick up my little girl, which means we probably have plenty of time to finish this program. I just want to put this right there so I can see it as I'm reading. That way I don't get carried away. I have no idea how long this chapter is. I've never read it before. Part of doing the program is, like when I was in college, I used to read the books that we were assigned in the chapters and whatnot onto a recording device. And then as I drove my semi-truck at night, delivering gypsum from St. George to Las Vegas, I would listen to things. So this is kind of like where this came from, and I like to study these things, so I figured if I'm going to read it, I might as well read it out loud and talk about things that I do know about. So that's why I do these programs, partly to share my testimony, partly to teach and expound knowledge and bring people closer to God. But this is all about just learning. So that's why I do these things. Anyway, continuing on. The actions of Avard and his band of Danites created much trouble and persecution for the church and its leaders. The two groups, Joseph's and Avard's, were organized or at least functioned for two different purposes, one for the defense and protection of the saints and the other for pillage and plunder of all who opposed or denounced the Mormons. Avard protected his members by the threat of severe penalties for revealing any of the Danite secrets. Joseph's militia was open and with knowledge and consent of the state. Page 152 of Blood Atonement. Further differences between Avard's group were clearly evident when the list of the officers of each were named. Reed Peck said that Robinson was a colonel, Dibble was a lieutenant general, Brunson a major, Carter a captain, captain general, Lott a major general, and Avard the brigadier general. See Reed Peck's manuscript. The armies of Israel were reported to have a commander-in-chief, Brunson a captain, Hinkle a commander-in-chief at Far West, Patton a captain, and Joseph a commander-in-chief of the whole force, according to Avard. However, when George M. Hinkle gave testimony of the judge of the Fifth Judicial Circuit in Missouri, he accidentally exposed Avard's lies when he said that the organization of the Danite Band took all power out of their hands in the Far West militia. He was exposing the two groups. Hinkle discovered that the Danite Band had functions that were different and in some cases superseded the jurisdiction of the local militia. Confusion soon resulted between the militia and the Danites. Enemies of the Mormons classified them as one and the same. To prevent this, Joseph made a statement that these companies of tens and fifties got up by Avard were altogether separate and distinct from these companies of tens and fifties organized by the Brethren for self-defense in case of attacks from the Mormon mob. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 181. But the distinction of the two was lessened by the fact that many of the Danites belonged to these armies of Israel camps and their functions were primarily for the same purpose. Then on November 2nd, 1838, quote, about this time, Sansom Avard was formed by a mob secreted in the hazelbrush some miles from Far West and brought into camp, where he and they were hell fellows well met. For Avard told them that the Danitism was an order of the church, and by his lying tried to make the church a scapegoat for his sins. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 193. Avard had hundreds of men sworn to secrecy, but when he was caught, he squealed like a pig. Not only was he willing to expose everything that he had been involved in, but he added many colorful and extended lies for his one-time enemies. Avard, of course, tried to save his own skin by saying the Danites and militia were the same, which obviously the enemies of the Mormons wanted to hear. He sold this information to his captors, page 153. For the promise to go free of the crimes which he had perpetuated, he created a mess and then blamed it on the Mormons. The prophet Joseph warned the saints that Avard had made an evil force out of his organization and that no one should have any connection with it. Said he, quote, "Let no one hereafter, by mistake or design, confound this organization of the church for the good and righteous purposes with the organizations of the Danites of the apostate Avard, which died almost before it it had existed. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 182. And again later he said, quote, I would suggest the impropriety of the organization of bands or companies by covenant or oaths by penalties or secrecies, but let the time pass or our experience and sufferings by the wickedness of Dr. Avard suffice, and let our covenant be that of the everlasting covenant, as it is contained in the Holy Writ and the things that God hath revealed unto us. Pure friendship always becomes weakened by the very moment you undertake to make it stronger by penal oaths and secrecy. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 303. Many men were involved with the rascality of and crimes of Dr. Avard, while others had done much the same on their own. The church was under the necessity to separate these perils from their midst. This was done in a conference at Quincy, Illinois. Brigham Young presided and gave a statement of the circumstances of the church at Far West after the conference had transacted various other business. Elder George W. Harris made some remarks relative to those who had left us in the time of our perils, persecutions, and dangers, and were acting against the interests of the church. He said that the church could no longer hold them in fellowship unless they repented of their sins and turned unto God. After the conference had fully expressed their feelings upon the subject, it was unanimously voted that the following persons be excommunicated from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And this is a list of the people here. Let me just see here. Okay. All right, so here's the list of the people that I guess they excommunicated. George M. Hinkle, Samson Avard, John Correll, Reed Peck, William W. Phelps, Frederick G. Williams, Thomas B. Marsh, Burr Riggs, and several others. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 284. So on March 17th, 1839, Avard was excommunicated from the church, or on page 154. When a knowledge of Avard's rascality came to the presidency of the church, he was cut off from the church and every means proper used to destroy his influence, at which he was highly incensed, and went about whispering his evil insinuations, but finding every effort availing, he again turned conspirator and sought to make friends with the mob. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 181. The most damaging insults and lies thrown against Joseph Smith because of the Danites were those given in the Fifth Circuit Judicial Circuit, later to be printed as Senate Document 189. Nearly all of these testimonies were apostates from the church. It was a peculiar court session. Over 40 persons testified in behalf of the state, but only 7 persons were permitted to testify for Joseph Smith. November 13, 1838. Dr. Samson Avard was the first brought before the court. He had previously told Mr. Oliver Olney that if he, Olney, wished to save himself, he must swear hard against the heads of the church, as they were the ones the court wanted to criminate. And if he could swear hard against them, they could not, the court or mob, disturb him. I intend to do it, said he, in order to escape, for if I do not, they will take my life. This introduction is sufficient to show the character of his testimony, and he swore just according to the statement he had made, doubtless thinking it wise course to ingratiate himself into the good graces of the mob. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 210. Several points must be made concerning the Danite organization. Since there were Mormons who were members, it must be determined just how far up the ranks the responsibility went, or who should take the blame for what occurred. I think people should take blame for what they do and not blame it on others. I don't know what you think, but that's what I think. Anyway, continuing on. Sidney Rigdon's involvement. Sidney Rigdon was a member of the First Presidency of the Church. According to his own testimony, he was not a member of the Danites. See Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 453. Sidney Rigdon's connection with the Danites was a matter of speculation. Testimony has been presented both for and against his affiliation with it. Rigdon made many rash statements and was a burden to Joseph Smith because he would create more trouble than ease it. In 1832, Rigdon, or on page 155, was dragged over the ice-crusted ground by his enemies, and then, from then on, he was given to peculiar mental problems. See Sidney Rigdon, Early Mormon Leader, by Darrell Chase, page 101. Avard claimed that he had received his authority from Sidney Rigdon, Doctrinal History of the Church, volume 3, page 181, to use the Danites to waste away the Gentiles by robbing and plundering them of their property. If Rigdon didn't have a part of the Danites, he probably would have sanctioned anything they did or intended to do. By 1839, Rigdon was all but out of the church, and his attitude was so bitter towards his enemies that he claimed he had suffered more than Christ. He told Brigham Young that Jesus Christ was a fool compared to him in sufferings. Really, Sidney? Really, Sidney? Really, Sidney? Wow. Oh. Times and Seasons, Volume 5, page 666. Whatever part Rigdon played or approved of with the Danites must be attributed to his bitterness against his persecutors. He did suffer about as much as a man could endure, and this was certain to foment acrid feelings at the least. In any case, Rigdon was not acting or speaking for the presidency of the church in his relation to the Danites. Number two, Joseph Smith's affiliation with the Danites. From most evidence or testimony, it appears that Joseph gave expression that the word Danite by name in the speech. Hold on. Joseph Smith gave expression to the word Danite by name in a speech. This was adopted to the group under the command of Avard. Joseph may well have approved of Avard's initial efforts, and perhaps the organization established by Avard, also the initial intention and purpose of defense and assistance of the order, would probably have been approved of by Joseph Smith. But when the organization took on plunderings and raiding, then Joseph could not have sanctioned its actions, neither did most of the men who were members of that order. Testimony in court by others confirmed the fact that Joseph Smith did not want anything done by the Mormons that was unlawful. Such testimony even came from some of his enemies. In court, John Correll said that he heard Joseph Smith relating the oppressions the society had suffered, and they wanted to be prepared for further events, but said he wished to do nothing unlawful, and if the people would let him alone, they would preach the gospel and live in peace. End quote, Senate Document, Volume 189, page 12. Or on page 156 of Blood Atonement by Ogden Kraut. Reed Peck gave testimony that he heard Joseph Smith say that in reference to stealing, he did not approve of it. Burr Riggs also said, "I never heard Joseph Smith Jr. say that he would disobey the laws of the country." Number three, who wrote the Constitution of the Danites and was and when it was ever read to his... I'm going to read that again. Number three, who wrote the Constitution of the Danites and when it was ever read to its members, and there's a question mark. No one could give any testimony of who wrote the Danite Constitution. It was given to General Clark, who in turn sent it to Governor Boggs. It could have been manufactured and given to state authorities to bring trouble upon the Mormons. This was probably so because some of those who would have who were supposed to have been there to hear it, read and approve of it, gave their own testimony that they knew nothing about it. John Quarrel was one who claimed this. I have learned of late that the Constitution was formed, savoring all the spirit of monarchy and adopted by the leaders and some others of this society, but I conclude that a few knew about it, for I never heard one lisp on the subject until after Avard exposed it after he was arrested. Senate document page one, or volume 189. Page 132. Page 32. I don't know why I keep on adding hundreds in there. Anyway, others testified that there was no constitution, which Dr. Avard said was introduced among the Danites. This testimony came from Allenson Ripley, William Huntington, Joseph Noble, Heber C. Kimball, and others. Number four, the validity of Dr. Samson Avard's testimony. Avard was a commander in Caldwell County, in the Caldwell County Militia, the Armies of Israel Defense Militia, but was later removed from that office. Said Avard, I once had a command as an officer, but Joseph Smith removed me from it, and I asked the reason. He assigned that he had another office for me. Senate document, volume 189, page 3. Here, according to his own testimony, he was dropped from Caldwell, the Caldwell militia, yet he had sworn that the Danites and the armies of Israel were one and the same. The new office that Avard was given was a surgeon for the armies of Israel military force. Quite a difference from being general. Page 157. In a petition to the court, five men testified that the testimony of Dr. Avard concerning a council held at James Sloan's was false. Your petitioners do solemnly declare that there was no such council, that your petitioners were with the prisoner, Joseph Smith, and there was no such vote or conversation as Dr. Avard swore to. End quote, Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 280. Joseph saw in his character the desire to be the greatest of the great and become the leader of the Mormon people. Elias Higbee said he was a man whose character was the worst I ever knew in all my associations or intercourse with mankind. In October 1837, Avard's license as a high priest in the Kirtland Stake was revoked. He had gone to Canada and pretended or presented false credentials to John Taylor and the presiding elder and claimed the presidency of the church there. The prophet rebuked Avard for this, and because of it, he lost his license. See Life of John Taylor, pages 42 and 44. This is part of the reason why I don't want to have a church. Like, I do baptisms, we do ordinances. I've had enough of these people that just go crazy within the organization of the church. I had to deal with it with Sam Schaefer and John Colthorpe and their lunacy just a year and a half ago, you know. And I'm just, you know, I've seen this kind of craziness come up in an organization. So I feel sorry for Joseph to have to deal with all this crap from these crazy people. But anyway, continuing on. Luckily, the two that I excommunicated are now in prison, and I don't have to deal with them anymore. Anyway, Lyman White gave another evidence of the Vard's character and ambitions. He was a man whose character was perfectly run down in all classes of society, and he, being a stranger, palmed himself upon the Mormon Church, and in order to raise himself in the estimation of the Church, invented schemes and plans to go against mobocracy, which were perfectly derogatory to the laws of the state and the United States, and frequently endeavored to enforce them upon the members of the Church. And when repulsed by Joseph Smith, he would frequently become chagrined. There's two words I've never seen before in print. At one time, he told me that the reason why he could not carry his plans into effect was that the first presidency of the Church feared he would have too much influence and gain the honor which the first presidency desired for themselves. At one time, he said to me that he would be damned if he did not carry his plans through. More than once, did he raise a conspiracy against them, the presidency, in order to take their lives, thinking that he might then rule the Church? Now, when he was brought before the court, he swore that all these treasonable purposes, which he had sworn in his heart to perform, originated with us. And quote Lyman White's journal, November 12, 1839. Page 158 of Blood Atonement. In court, Avard's statements about Joseph Smith and the Church were just what the Missourians wanted to hear. The result was a prison term for several leading members of the Church, and also months in a dungeon for Joseph Smith. From prison, Joseph wrote, quote, "We have learned also since we have been prisoners that many false and pernicious things which were calculated to lead the saints far astray and to do great injury that have been taught by Dr. Avard as coming from the presidency." And there's no proof. There was no proof of it except for somebody's lies. "And we have reason to fear that many other designing and corrupt characters like unto himself have been teaching many things which the presidency never knew were being taught in the Church by anybody until after they were made prisoners." Like with Knights of the Crystal Blade, I had no idea what the heck they were doing. Apparently, they were doing some of the stuff that they were doing before I excommunicated them from the Church of the Living Messiah. You know, and like, am I supposed to be held accountable? Was Joseph Smith supposed to be held accountable for what these apostates did? Why should he be held accountable for what these apostates did? Should I be held accountable when I did not know what was going on? Anyway, and then you've got these stupid people, and they think that they can just, like, I don't know, like, try to overthrow things and claim authority. And like this guy, you know, he went up to John Taylor with falsified credentials to try to take leadership and power in the Church in Canada. You know, I don't know. I've seen correlation in my own ministry with not correlation, but I don't know what you call it, like similarities. Anyway, luckily, I don't have an organization as large as Joseph's was, so. And I'm glad I don't. Anyway, had they known such things, they would have spurned them and their authors as they would the gates of hell. Thus we find that there have been frauds and secret abominations and evil works of darkness going on, leading the minds of the weak and unwary into confusion and distraction, and all the time palming it upon the presidency, while the presidency were ignorant as well as innocent of those things which those persons were practicing in the Church of in their name. Is not all manner of evil of every description spoken of us falsely? And we say unto you, falsely, we have been misrepresented, and misunderstood, and belied. And the purity and integrity and uprightness of our hearts have not been known. And it is through ignorance, yea, the very depths of ignorance, is the cause of it. And not only ignorance, but on the part of some, gross wickedness and hypocrisy also, and would bring great trouble and sorrow upon our heads. And in fine, we have waded through an ocean of tribulation and mean abuse practiced upon us by the ill-bred and the ignorant, that they cannot appear respectable in any decent and civilized society, and whose eyes are full of adultery and cannot cease from sin. Remember that whatsoever measure you meet out to others, it shall be measured unto you again. We say unto you, brethren, be not afraid of your adversaries. Contend earnestly against mobs and the unlawful works of dissenters and of darkness. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 3, page 231 and 233. Page 159. As mentioned, the original object of the organization of the Danites was to aid the saints by expulsion of the dissenters and apostates from among them. The second objective was brought on by necessity, which was to protect the Mormons against all the mob violence that was being thrown at it. The third came under Avard, which was to plunder, rob, and harass their enemies. He was never punished by the law for his actions in this organization, nor did he ever suffer the misery he caused others. On the other hand, the armies of Israel were created by the order of General Alexander Doniphan, who was not even a Mormon, and were later called the Danites through maligning testimony of Avard. Both of these groups were broken down into tens and fifties. Both even had some of the same members. Avard had secretive means and threats to protect himself and his designs. He taught his men that the First Presidency approved of all his actions, and they were to obey instruction without question. To oppose his orders was to disobey the orders of the First Presidency, he said. Avard's skill in using the Mormon principles for his own purposes was best demonstrated when he persuaded them to consecration for the kingdom of God. Scriptures were used by him to his own objectives. Oaths, signs, and tokens and passwords were incorporated with the inclusion of the Constitution to make it all appear more sacred and exclusive. The Danites were no longer in existence from the day that Avard became a turncoat in his own establishment. He would be foolish to continue with something that had the law cracked down upon, including putting Mormons in jail. The Mormons already had a legal and larger company of men in arms than William Law and others were conspiring against the prophet's life in the year 1844. Extra guards had to be put around the leaders of the church. Some then claimed the organization of the Danites had been revived, which was stoutly denied. Correlated History of the Church, Volume 2, page 223. Although the Danites were short-lived, their name and terror continued to be part of Mormonism, as the Gentiles were wont to tell. But perhaps to good purpose, for it was the lawlessness and criminals who feared and shuddered at the name of Danites. Page 160 of Blood Atonement. The people of Utah are charged with having committed terrible murders and robberies. Danites, or destroying angels, are talked about by sensational writers and believed in by the uninformed. Now, what is the fact? Utah stands head and shoulders above every other territory in the United States so far as the crime of murder is concerned. You cannot find a Western territory or state within the United States where there has not been 100% more murders, lynchings, and lawlessness than can be found in the annals of Utah. Take the state of California, the state of Nevada, and all the surrounding territories, and it will be found that there has been less violation of law, fewer murders, and less lynching in Utah than in any one of these from the beginning. There is no man that knows anything about history, the history of the Western states and territories for the last 30 years, but knows this to be absolutely the fact. But because a few horse thieves and murders have perchance been summarily dealt with by officers of the law who were the appointees of the United States and acting under the authority of the parent government and laws of the territory, the whole people of Utah are accused of being murderers. Joseph F. Smith, Journal of Discourses, Volume 24, page 12. Years later, the haunting influence of the Danites still shadowed the Mormons. Many the Danites were to be feared and avoided, and many a traveler through the Utah Territory had been previously told of gruesome and grisly stories of the Danites. Watch out for the Danites was as common as watch out for the boogeyman. Brigham Young used the term Danite as a word of warning to the lawless rascals that either lived in the territory or were passing through. On one occasion he said, "There have been men here who have had their plans arranged for robbing, and I will take the liberty to say, when we find them, judgment will be laid to the line and righteousness to the plummet. Actually, that was a reference of Isaiah. Interesting. The line and the plummet were, how they built structures. So the plummet line was a line that determined true up and down. And then the square, the line, anyway, whatever. Those are my feelings, and I expressed them plainly that the good and honest may be able to pass from the eastern states to California and back and forth in peace, and when a Mormon unlawfully disturbs anybody, I say let him be overtaken by a vigilance committee. And when mobocrats come here, they will find a vigilance committee. Now, listeners, send that to the states, if you wish. I want the people of the states to know that there are a few poor curses here, and also to know that we do not want a gang of highwaymen here, page 161. And I say to all such characters, if you come here and practice your iniquity, we will send you home quick, whether we can catch and convict you. I wish such characters would let the boys have a chance to lay their hands on them. If men come here and do not behave themselves, they will not only find the Danites, whom they talk so much about, biting the horses' heels, but the scoundrels will find something biting their heels. Journal of Discourses, Volume 5, page 6. Brigham used an oppressive or autocratic language when talking to sinners and the lawless, not in the usual exhortation of the evangelist, but it had its potent effect, and the results were proof of its worth. Brigham gave this illustration. Look at St. Louis. More murders have been committed there in almost any few days than have been committed in this territory since it was organized. It is customary there to have murders committed almost daily, but we above all other people ought never have had such crime committed in our midst, and we never have had so far as the Latter-day Saints are concerned. Journal of Discourses, Volume 5, page 6. The Danites were said to have numbered up to 400 members at one time, according to John Coral. It is amazing that such a formidable group could have been so secret, especially to so many of the Mormon people. Many of the 12 apostles knew nothing about their organization until after it was brought to light by Avard. Even John Taylor, who was living in Far West in 1838, was not aware of their existence or their deeds. As late as 1870, he declared, "I have heard a good deal about the Danites, but I never heard of them among the Latter-day Saints. If there was such an organization, I was not made acquainted with it." Deseret News, 1870. So what he's saying there is he never heard the rumors by the Latter-day Saints. It was always rumors, you know, that other people were talking about the Saints. So William Smith, brother to the prophet, is suspected to have dictated the writing of a long article on the Danites. Brigham Young said of William, "He, William, defies the United States to send a government here that can do anything with the Mormons except himself. He declares that no man can go to Utah but a man who is well acquainted with the Mormons and one who has as much influence among them as Brigham Young and presents himself as a man." He also tells about the Danites and asserts that they are in every town and city throughout the whole United States and that their object is not known by the people, that they are all over the world, brother, and that there are thousands of them, and that the life of every officer that comes here is in the hands of the Danites, that even the President of the United States is not safe. For at 1 week from Brigham, the Danites will be upon him and kill him. After all this, he says that no man can go there, and when he gets through with his story sufficiently to expose who he is, he says in purport, "I can go there, and if you do not believe me, try me, and if you think I cannot, give me the right to go there with a good large army." Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 345. William Smith, like so many other anti-Mormons, taught that Mormons were terrible killers, yet they themselves wanted to destroy the Mormons. The critics of Mormonism have always used every tactic which they have charged against the Mormons. Their only intent is to destroy the religion of the Latter-day Saints. In that desire, they use the testimony of men like Avard and other apostates to prove that Mormonism is wrong. Regardless of what the facts may be, they will not give up clinging to the false testimony of the traitor. If they had lived in the days of Christ, they undoubtedly would have believed the testimony of Judas Iscariot and assisted state officials in destroying Christ and his religion. Certainly, Judas must have come up with a preponderance of evidence and proof to have convinced the judges and citizens of both the Roman and the Jewish nations to destroy Christ and persecute the Christians. Mormonism, being the same gospel of Christ, has also developed the same apostates and their false testimonies. How ironic that the man who organized the Danites was also the one who destroyed them. But the rumors, stories, and charges of the Danites still throw a terror into the unsuspecting investigators of Mormonism. I think we're getting close to the end here. If anybody does want to call, the studio is open. That guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. And I can talk even after I have to leave the house because I have a cell phone and that's how I get into the radio broadcast. But anyway, The Mormons have felt like Mosiah, who languished over how much iniquity one man can cause. The beginning Samson of Vard and his Danites had a just cause, but as he turned to criminal activities and objectives, he brought trouble to himself and to Mormonism. Whatever worthy intentions he had or favorable deeds he had done, they were overshadowed by the crimes he committed. Although he espoused an honorable religion, when he turned to wickedness, he abandoned and turned traitor to his own faith, like Judas, who caused death and destruction upon Christ and his disciples, but not the destruction of Christianity. Neither could Avard cause the overthrow and breakup of Mormonism. Yet even today, most anti-Mormon publications usually say something about the secret band of the Danites. Their books are filled with stories and pictures of the most horrid nature, all pawning off the idea that this is Mormonism, Danitism, or blood atonement. But the cry and clamor of the deceptive critics are only tools of illusion to persuade people from investigating, being converted to the gospel, or being converted to the gospel of Jesus Christ as revealed to the prophet Joseph Smith. Tomorrow, not tomorrow, but on Monday when we come back on, we will start on page 164. We'll be in chapter 11 of Blood Atonement, the controversy. Chapter 11 of Blood Atonement, so the controversy. That'll be the next chapter that we come up with here. And it just stopped. Oh, there it is. Anyway, I got a comment on one of my Facebook on my Facebook, which anybody can talk to me on Facebook if you don't want to be on the line, and nobody is on the line, so I'm going to end this video pretty quickly here. But this comment in here, it says, "We always face persecution if we are true believers. Book of Mormon is life to me." So anyway, that's pretty much the end of the program, since we don't have any callers on, and I have to leave here in a couple of minutes anyway. Thank you for watching this broadcast. Remember, I will post this broadcast, this video, along with the radio link to the podcast and all of Chapter 10 to Zion's Redemption Bookstore, which is a page on Facebook. You can also watch this video at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/user/ God is my compass, channel name Messiah Ben Joseph. Please like, share, and subscribe, or at least subscribe, right? You can also comment on the videos there, and also you can comment on the videos at my Facebook page if you're watching from YouTube, facebook.com/Lazarus 1977. That's Lazurus 1977. So that's another broadcast of Fundamentally Mormon. Thank you everybody for watching. Take care. God bless. And Shalom Aleichem. May peace be upon you. Goodbye.